Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top trade sales for January 2014 through Diamond to retailers. This starts, I've been covering the numbers since December 2005, so about 8 years into this now. And most years we've talked about this, Chris, January is just not a strong month. It usually averages around the lowest, both on the comics and the trade side and such. And part of that is, I think people are feeling the pain of having, you know, done the Christmas and holiday stuff and, you know, Hanukkah or whatever, you know, religion they celebrate. It's a big gift giving in holiday time. It's expensive.
Right.
So come January, people are like, I gotta pay bills. I know it's certainly that way for me this year. Geez. So breakdown of the top 300 trades. DC on top, not a big surprise there. They had 28.83% of the total units for the top 300. That equates to about 83,874 units. Marvel, not all that far behind. They had 24.51% of the total unit. That's 71,317 units. After that is Image. Image, of course, having a strong backlist, at least in the form of Robert Kirkman titles, usually. It had, Image had 47,223 units, giving it 16.23% of the breakdown of the units for the top 300. I did not, this time around, go figure out how much that was Walking Dead and other Kirkman titles. That would have taken a little bit of doing. And I just got these numbers yesterday. As we record this.
Yeah, well, presumably it's the majority, so I think we can, you know, bank on that.
It's a safe bet.
Yeah.
I do want to get the number crunching such that I can easily isolate that and otherwise kind of group titles and such, because I think in a couple of cases the lion's share of sales goes to a small minority of titles and such.
Well, would you do that for Walking Dead, or you do that for all of the Skybound?
I would do it for... If I can get it working how I think I can, Kirkman, mm-hmm. or actually Walking Dead, with a superset of above that of Kirkman, and then above that of Skybound.
Okay.
Get it to where I can break it down any of those ways, because it's interesting how much of Kirkman's sales is just Walking Dead, even though he's got Invincible, Thief of Thieves. What else does he have? He's got Super Dinosaur, one or two other things going, I think. So.
Yeah.
Again, it just takes a successful title or two to really make a difference. You know, one of the things I noticed this time around over on the comics side is the sales of Detective and Batman 27. And those two titles sold as much or more than virtually every other publisher other than obviously Marvel, Image, and I think IDW. Although, frankly, it wasn't that far behind IDW. That's two issues for DC, you know? They're just playing at a different level. Again, one or two high-ticket items, Marvel having a $125 item, DC is $75. Average price, though, it's interesting. DC's average price is around $19.53, whereas Marvel's was around $28.02. So if you're looking for more affordable collected editions, I think DC is definitely the way to go. And I think they just generally have a better, stronger backlist. But it's interesting
That's
because
true.
If you take the top 300 sales... by retail dollars, DC again did 28.83% of the units. They did 28.80% of the dollars, so like a 0.03% of a difference there, down slightly. Marvel, who did 24.51% of the units for the top 300, did 32.5% of the dollars for the top 300 trades. And again, higher price point, you get more money. It's just that simple. So I tend not to put too much stock in, you know, what percentage of the dollars and such like that, because you can really kind of goose the numbers that way. But, you know, compared to a little below $1.7 million for DC on the trade's top 300 list, Marvel did well over $1.8 million. So, you know, again, sell it at a higher price, you make more money. That's I think pretty basic economics.
You took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Hey, you know, I've studied a little of that stuff.
How is Image? You know, we talked a lot about Image on the breakdown of the 2013. How did Image carry over from December to January? Off the top of your head, are they kind of sustaining? Are they you know, falling up a little bit? How was their, you know, Christmas into the off season? I guess going back to a little bit on Kirkman.
Right. Let me.
I know I'm kind of catching you off guard, but it just kind of came to mind. So.
No, it's a good question. Let me pull up the December spreadsheet real fast. Because when I do some of the aggregates for the publishers, frankly, I do Marvel, DC, and other. And we want more than that. Let's see. This time around,
yeah.
Image did 47,223. Last month, they did 50,041 units. So that's off by, you know, a few thousand. Dollar-wise, though, they're only off about 16,000. Last time in December, they did $797,548.59 at retail versus $781,234.77. So a little over $16,000 down and around...
Okay.
Not quite 3,000 units down, a little under that, about 2,800 units, we'll say, if I can do the math in my head, which sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. So again, they were off a bit, but Marvel was down about 10,000 units, DC was down 47,000 units, substantially.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is if you go to the top two items on the trades list. Both of them are reorder activity. Saga mm-hmm. Volume 1 trade paperback topped the list with 2,401 units. And Walking Dead came in second place with 4,139 units. Not bad, but, I mean, particularly for reorder activity. But when the first new thing on the list was the all-new X-Men Volume 1 trade paperback, yesterday's X-Men, that did 3,540 units, that's... Again, it comes down to how many stories do you think are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go with a high estimate, it's, you know, a copy or two on average at every store of an X-Men trade featuring the original X-Men, literally.
Yeah.
Was that collected in hardcover first?
I believe it was, yes. That's how it's generally going these days.
You think that's a good idea? You think that's a bad idea?
I think it depends on the property. I mean, I think if you're going to go with a known commodity and a known name behind that commodity, like a Daredevil by Mark Waid, it's going to go hardcover first and then trade. If you're going to go, you know, DC Comics Presents, which we touched on last episode, that's going to go straight to trade first and foremost.
All right.
You know, I think it's give and take, you know?
Oh, yeah, certainly it's situational. I think there's some things that... are geared more towards the premium, uber deluxe hardcover edition. Others, they just want the story and they want it cheap.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting and puts that 3,540 units for that X-Men trade into perspective is we had another 588 units of reorder activity of that hardcover down at rank 185, putting the total sales for the hardcover that we know about at 6,109 units. So, obviously not a 2-to-1 difference, but... definitely more people got that hardcover. And mm-hmm. it's only $5 more. So frankly, it came out, let's see. Wow, that thing came out in March of last year. So mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know why people would have waited for the trade. It's not that much cheaper, and it came out, 10 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So given that, it's a little surprising it did almost as well as it did, really. Because they've already put out the second and third hardcovers.
There was one thing I wanted to touch on that when you posted your article on Comic Book Resources today, you know, I rarely go into the forums these days, whether it be anyone's forums, but because I just don't like the rhetoric, you know. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was very interesting because it had, at the time when you posted it this afternoon, it had two comments. And the first comment was... obviously, there is yours. There's two comments after that. And the one guy said that Detective Comics 27 only, and this is going to the comic side. I know we talk about trades, mm-hmm. but I thought this was very relevant for the conversation and very timely because you just published this. But the first comment was Detective Comics 27 only sold 88,000 copies. Wow, that's bad. And then I don't know if you can talk to that, being that Batman 27 sold over 100,000. And then the second comment, which I thought was very interesting, kind of goes to the heart of the matter of why we look at these numbers from month to month. And it's really the epitome. And the one guy said, I, for the life of me, don't understand why retailers would order high for Black Widow number one and then cut sales almost 50% for number two when it was sold in the same month. Also, it's sure looking like the Marvel Knights experiment is a bit of a flop. Are the Miracle Man reprints, or as are the Miracle Man reprints, and let's not forget Revolutionary War. It also looks like rebranding Inhumanity Medusa to Inhumanity number two didn't pan out so well. Superman and Wonder Woman is surprisingly low for the book it's supposed to be. Avengers Assemble is performing admirably for a book that didn't have a true direction. Meanwhile, I'm somewhat disappointed in the Swamp Thing sales have fallen below 20K. That's a lot to go over, but I just wanted to touch. I know. You know,
is that all?
Bill O'Reilly. But let's touch on Black Widow, because I thought that was interesting. Because
I'll tell you what,
it occurred to me that Black Widow 1 and number 2.
Let's take it from the top. What was the first?
Yes, let's take it the Black Widow one. Right.
Well, no, all the way from the Batman thing was.
Oh, the Batman thing. Yeah.
All right. First off, Detective. And Sam and I will probably get into some of this too.
I know. I don't want to take thunder away from Sam because he's a hell of a guy.
Oh, he is. He's got some great insights and such. I love doing the episodes with him. Detective. 88,702 units. Is that high? Is that low? It was a $7.99 book.
Right.
I don't think it did bad at all. Yeah. Add in the fact at the $8.99 price, which is the combo edition, it sold another 1633 units. So at that, you know, at an $8 or $9 cover price, that's pretty hefty. It's pretty big. I think it did well. I mean, it was the number two item on the list. If that's doing badly, I'd hate to see what that person thinks really sucks in terms of sales. And I'm not saying they're wrong in terms of there are things that suck in terms of sales. But again, number two item having an $8 almost price tag, pretty impressive.
Was Batman a $7.99 book too?
No, Batman was a $3.99 book. It was the only book on the comic side to do over the 100,000 with 115,492 units. It's basically January, low sales, $8.99 book, tough thing to swallow. And again, another 1,600 units down at the bottom of the list.
Right.
What was the next point? Next issue on the guy's list.
Well, how come Black Widow number one sold high? He said, for the life of me, I don't understand why retailers would order high for Black Widow one and then cut sales almost 50% for number two when it was sold in the same month.
All right. Just to get, at the risk of getting slightly.
And we don't have to go over the rest. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Either way, we'll go with this.
No, we can save some for Sam.
That works. Forward that to Sam so we do talk about it. It's good stuff. I'm really bad about responding to comments over on Comic Book Resources. I'll be honest. There are times...
You've got 26 comments right now. So
there are times those kinds of forums scare me. It's like I could really get sucked into that. And frankly, I just haven't had the time to even go check between crunch and the numbers, and I got a day job and stuff. Black Widow. Comic books...
Day job.
Are a faith-based medium at the risk of sounding religious. What that means is what we are seeing here is a reflection of the faith the retailers have. And the guy's question is basically, why did they have so much more faith in the first issue than the second issue, where it dropped by nearly 42%? First, 42% drop on a second issue for Marvel, not that bad, which is scary. Basically, what happens is a lot of the first issues at Marvel in particular, they basically do a bazillion covers on. Now, in this particular case, both Black Widow 1 and 2 had extra covers. I am attempting to pull up the retailer order form just to see real quick if I can find out how many each of them had. Because I'm not finding the... Oops, I didn't find it at all, actually. There we go. Black Widow number 1. Basically, I don't find... first issue sales to be particularly meaningful, particularly over at Marvel, to a lesser degree at some of the other publishers, because of the shenanigans they pull. Black Widow number one had a regular cover. It had a one, order one if you buy 50 of the regular. It had an order one if you buy 100 of the regular. Actually, it had two of those, one by Campbell, one by Manera. It had another cover you could get by Young if you ordered 200% of Hawkeye number 14. Correction, it had two of those. One was the Young cover, one was the blank cover. Yeah, I see 200% of the orders of Hawkeye number 14 with orders for Black Widow number 1 regular cover and this variant order all you want. So not exactly a ratio kind of a split. But then for Black Widow number 2, they had the regular cover and a 1 in 50 Cho cover. So a lot less support in terms of variant covers. Retailers know a lot of people are going to sample an issue, and then, wait for the trade, not get it, whatever. A lot of people just want the number ones. And when you've got first issues that get so many variant covers, so much, of the chase going after it, and there's none of that on the second, you've got to expect sales to drop. You know, it used to be that, 22% or so drop on a second issue was average. I have not had time to recalculate the numbers in light, particularly of the Marvel Now initiative, where they are just relaunching and rebooting and renumbering, or not rebooting, but relaunching and renumbering at an alarming pace. And I think that's going to trickle onto the trade side in so much as some volumes of comic book titles are lasting barely long enough to collect into a trade or two. You know, it doesn't make sense to do two trades, renumber, redo, another series of Wolverine trades or some other title that's lasted, I don't know, a dozen issues. It's absolutely insane. So, good questions. Good questions. I probably ought to...
No, they are good questions. Yeah.
I ought to check out that forum a little bit more. It's just, it's busy and sometimes it can get a little frustrating.
Some months you get no comments and some you get 26 like we did today. So, it goes... I just thought that was kind of interesting to see, so...
It is. And it's one of those things
we should tell everybody that we enjoy your feedback. So if you want to write us directly and not just write on the forum.
Well, it's funny because I include my email address at the end of all my articles.
Yes.
And sometimes I get some emails. I don't get that much. And if people have questions, I usually try to answer. I mean, sometimes it takes a little time for me to go do the digging around to get a good answer. But some of this is something that if you look at a surface level, it's like, well, clearly it's this way. But if you really dig a little deeper, understand a little more thoroughly, you realize it's a little bit more complex of an issue. There's a few more nuances. And I really think the sales estimates are a woefully misunderstood beast in the comic arena.
Absolutely. Well, it's evident month in and month out, right? What we do.
Well, periodically, there have been certain creators who insist that these numbers are wrong. No, they're just not the numbers they think they are, and these are sometimes from very, very smart guys. You know, they look at their royalty statement and say, well, I'm getting paid on, X thousands of copies. Why do you say I'm selling half that? I'm not. I'm saying Diamond is reporting sales of half of that.
And that's just what they're reporting, right?
Exactly. It's not a semantic difference. Normally, the list goes to 300 trades. They seem to have expanded the list to the comics to 400, plus a few things that fall below the radar if they're small press or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is what they have invoiced to retailers. And I am, I've always been reasonably confident in my numbers. I'm at the point where... I don't want to have to go toe-to-toe with like a Kirkman, a Bendis, a Brian Wood, or something like that, but I think I can stand my ground that these numbers, for what they are accurate, and there have been a couple of times, I know Bendis and Kirkman did a panel at, I forget which convention, I think it might have been Chicago one year, or New York, one of the two, these numbers are wrong, et cetera, and they can prove it, and guess what? They didn't. I am, again, solid with these numbers. I just think they mean something different than what those creators think they mean.
Well, there's always a, if a Bendis or a Kirkman, whoever wants to really go challenge the numbers, they might be surprised by finding out that they are selling less than they expected. So you got to be careful.
It's funny because
it's a two-way street with that.
It is. But I want them to challenge the numbers, but in a very different way. I want them to challenge the numbers much the way Kirkman has been doing for the last decade by selling more comics. and challenging what the preconceived notions are as to what comics can sell. He got second place on the list with a book that's been out for, a decade?
Yeah.
That's pretty damn impressive. To me, that's how he should be challenging the numbers and what is acceptable sales and what is not, or what is viable sales and what is not. You know, hey, that's just me. So let's go down the list. We've talked about, obviously, the top three items. Next one, rank number four, was Superior Spider-Man Volume 4 trade paperback. Did 3,423 units. Now, for comparison, the third volume's done total sales of 4,630 units. That's about a 26% drop. But keep in mind, that's comparing the total known sales of the previous volume to the initial month sales of the new volume. So give it time, it'll catch up. Now, what's interesting at rank number five is we've got Batman 66, the TV Stories trade paperback. That did 3,311 units. That is a collection of the issues that are collections of the digital installments. And if we hop over to
it's not.
It's not? Oh, no, you're right. I totally...
Because I covered this on my podcast. Yes.
This is the stuff...
a collection of the Golden Age and Silver Age stories that inspired the TV show of the 1960s. Many of which were rewritten for episodes for the TV show. And, you know, had like the first appearance of the Riddler, first appearance of the Penguin, I don't think the first appearance of the Joker is in here. I forget off the top of my head, but one of the stories, was adapted for the show. It also included the first appearance of Batgirl, which I had to do some digging, John. I didn't know if Batgirl came before the show or came after the show. And it turns out, from what both. I gather is both. She was written specifically to get on the show. They tried her out in the comic books and she debuted. And the next thing you know, Yvonne Craig is cast. And I think she was on the show within like 2 or 3 months of her comic book debut.
Well, if that's that version of Batgirl. There was one from the 50s because there was also a Batwoman and Batgirl.
Well, the Kathy Kane, right. Yeah.
The Kathy Kane Bat Kane.
Right.
So
Bat Kane, right.
Yeah. Who became Flamebird later and who's currently also showing up in the Batwoman series right now. It's funny, though, because I look at that title and if I had seen that on the rack, I probably would have just chalked it up. Oh, that's a collected edition of the current print stuff. So thank you for correcting me on that.
Yeah, but this really is coming out because of the current digital series. And, you know, if the digital series didn't exist, this would have been just another trade paperback that probably would have sold about, 1,200 copies or something like that, like a Batman Chronicles or something like that. Just another, you know, trade paperback of Golden Age stories.
So I think it really got a push. Yeah. Is the comic stuff that's collecting the digital stuff. Like issue 7 of the Batman 66 series, 21,802 units. That's doing pretty good, and that's the lowest that thing has done since it started, around 50,430 units. So it's dropping substantially, no question about it, but it's still way more successful than a number of other DC titles, including many set in the New 52, some of which are alarmingly low in sales. And then down at rank number 6, we've got the second volume of Saga trade paperback, reorder activity, another 3,243 units. So that first Saga trade paperback, total known sales of over 88,000, second volume around 48,000. So, you know, give that time, and it could definitely give Walking Dead kind of a run for its money if it lasts, you know, a decade, which maybe it will, maybe it won't, who knows.
Yeah.
Next up after
that, what else
we got? Rank 7, which is the top selling, in terms of dollars, item. That's, X-Men Battle of the Atom hardcover. $49.99 hardcover that did 3,110 units. So not too shabby there.
I did not read that.
You should. I loved it.
I heard it was good stuff.
It was, probably my favorite, X-Men crossover of recent years and probably even going further back than that. It kept me engaged the entire time through. Often things kind of trickle out at some point in the process for me. I feel like they've forced in some franchise that didn't quite fit, you know? Shoehorning, X-Factor or some other thing in there in an awkward way. We've got a little bit lower down, rank number 10, Thor, God of Thunder, Volume 1, trade paperback, The God Butcher story, 2,955 units, outselling by 13 units, Baker's Dozen, My Little Pony, When Cutie Calls, trade paperback, which is actually kind of funny, because that was a $7.99 trade for My Little Pony compared to the $19.99 trade for Thor. So, the higher price, I think, it was also a larger issue, because that was, what, 11 issues for that Thor story? Pretty sure.
Yes, I believe it was, yeah.
So,
which they just wrapped up Volume 3 just wrapped up in the comic book side, because I just finished it tonight. I think it was, 19 point now or something like that. So,
yeah, I'm getting a little tired of the numbering shenanigans like that. It's
yeah. What do you make of that?
I think it's really annoying. The point now doesn't bother me too much. I think it's foolish, a little bit of a bait and switch the way they're trying to make things look more like a number one than they are. But when you start hitting, well, it's funny because on the comic side they ran in consecutive ranks, rank 65 and 66 on the comic side, Iron Man 20 and 20 point INH for the Inhumanity such.
Oh, jeez.
In other cases, when we got a point INH, there wasn't a non-point INH version of the issue to be had. And we have Mighty Avengers 5-point INH, but there is no just 5. Be consistent. This is getting crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and going back to the comment the poster made of the rebranding of Inhumanity Medusa to Inhumanity number 2.
Yes.
I saw that on the shipping list for a week. Looked on what I have on order. It's like, I don't have Inhumanity number 2. When was this solicited? And I was looking around. It took me a while to figure out it was a renumbering or renaming. I like to think I pay attention to this stuff. You know, it's crazy. It is counterproductive. Mm-hmm. And it's going to continue for a few months. When I did the picks for the preview spotlight this time around, I picked Nightcrawler number 1. Alas, I had to do my clip on X-Men Legacy number 1, because apparently that's now what it may be called. And I don't know which shipped first, the previews print, you know, PDF, or, you know, what they send to the printer for that, or what they sent to, like, comic book resources. So maybe comic book maybe it's going to be Nightcrawler. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm confused.
Yeah.
I don't like being confused.
See, that can be confusing on the collected edition side, because a lot of times in the solicitations, they will alphabetize what is collected in the book and not put in what is reader continuity, you know, or reading order in the solicitation.
I get doing that when you have multiple issues of a couple of titles that, like, intertwine, and you could say, you know, it's Green Lantern, you know, 20 through 23 and Green Lantern Core 20 through 23 versus, you know, having to list each title for each number and stuff like that.
Right.
What gets me is when they claim to have collected something that never saw print. Hasn't happened often, but
right.
It has happened. One of the monkey books that Marvel did many years ago was one of those. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was. They did 4 one-shots, one of which never saw print, and they claimed that they collected it. I had the other 3. I didn't want to get the collection because of it, but it was, yeah, kind of annoying. As you can tell, I get annoyed easily by these sorts of crazy shenanigans. I would much rather they just, I don't know, put things in consecutive numbers and do things in a reasonable, sane basis. I actually had to deal this month on the comic side, the Hawkeye shipping out of order fiasco. So,
what was that fiasco?
They shipped 16 before 15. 15 still hasn't shipped.
Oh, jeez.
So the way my system works, it didn't find the previous issue because, well, it hadn't shipped. And next time, I don't know if it'll find compare 15 to 16 or what it'll do. It's frustrating. It's annoying. It's silly. I think the problem with comic sales is not the titles they use, the numbering they do, or, you know, let me be clear on this. I don't think these numbering gimmicks and titling gimmicks are helping sales. I think they are hurting sales. You know, a title's not going to sell, isn't selling poorly because it's suddenly in double digits. It's because people have gotten tired of it, or it's not that good, or they're not interested, or, you know, whatever. change the content, not the packaging. Well, I mean, it makes sense to be making things easy for the readers, the retailers, to keep track of what's going on, and I think they're making it harder and harder and harder by the constant renumbering. I mean, they've been doing this for years on the trade side, where a new creative team, all a new volume one of Daredevil or whatever. It gets to where it's hard to recommend things to people because they're liable to pick up the wrong thing, and then, well, why did you recommend this? So it's something that I think is reasonably self-defeating in terms of just the way the business is being done. You know, they could package things better, make things easier on us, and sell better as a result. You know, I'm not going to claim if they suddenly just did consecutive numbering across the board, sales would just skyrocket. But, you know, they wouldn't... Well, it's funny, I touched on this in my article too. Part of the reason the ongoing sales tend to plummet on books is because they don't promote ongoing books. You know, they'll promote a new trade, they'll promote, you know, sometimes a new creative team, but they'll always promote a new volume. Speaking of promotions, one thing I want to get your thoughts on, such as that all-new X-Men Volume 1 we talked about that was third on the list.
Yes.
I get, obviously, all-new X-Men in comic book format, read it every month, get the digital code in there that's a bonus. It's like, okay, it's a bonus. I would feel like I'm getting gypped if I don't cash that in, because, well, they're essentially charging me an extra buck for it. What they're doing now is I get the issue digitally. Okay, cool. I get the Marvel previews digitally. Okay, now that they've cleaned up their system to where it doesn't mean I've got to enter one comic at a time, redeem, one comic, redeem, and go through the multiple page process. Now that I can do multiple of those, that's cool. But I'm also starting to get collections digitally with some of these things.
Oh, interesting.
So with one of the recent all-new X-Men ones, I got that collection, yesterday's X-Men, digitally as part of it. Same with, I think it was Avengers World. I've got, let's see, Captain America volume, or issue 16 point now, and it comes not only with the bonus digital edition, but a digital collection as well. I'm not entirely sure which one off the top of my head.
Oh, that's really nice.
How do you think that influences the desirability of print collections, and do you think it potentially, I don't want to say devalues them, but I mean, why should I have even considered picking up that all-new X-Men, yesterday's X-Men trade paperback? I've got it digitally for the comic.
You get the you got the comic, and then you got the, which comic did you get, and then you got a full trade with it?
Whichever issue that was of all-new X-Men. Here, let me, so Captain America 16 point now. If I go to the code with the coupon, I get... It doesn't tell me. Mm. Oh, Captain America Volume Castaway in Dimension Z at no extra charge.
Oh, so you get the first trade.
Yep.
Okay. That's really nice.
In theory, I'm reading the book. Shouldn't I already have the trade? I mean, well, for a point now issue, they're assuming a jump on. So if I get the full collected edition for the previous thing that I can then go read and then actually jump on... Not a bad idea.
Hmm.
But I think that may potentially undercut sales of the trade. Now, what we've been seeing for the last few years, sure, sales are on a title-by-title basis dropping, but hey, that's nothing new. And certainly not something new with day-and-date digital.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if now that the stuff has been day-and-date digital for a few years, if that's part of why we're seeing some unimpressive or less impressive collected edition sales.
Boy, they certainly aren't advertising that, though, because I didn't even know about that, unless they have it in the solicitations or something.
It's hidden on the cover in the bonus, you know, little logo thing.
Huh.
And that's actually an excellent question as to if it is in the solicitation text or not.
Buy this comic and get the first trade digitally for free or something. Boy, even if they were to charge for a dollar. Yeah, whole trade for a dollar digitally, that's not bad either. Of course, they don't want to have two different editions of the comic, though. That's the other problem.
It was not mentioned in the solicitation for that Captain America 16 point.
Boy, that's a nice surprise. Some little nice Cracker Jack prize in the box kind of thing.
I mean, for $3.99, you get the print issue, the digital issue, and the digital trade. I really think Marvel is trying to compete in the digital arena by kind of... I don't say making DC look bad, but by looking better than DC because they're doing those things.
Mm-hmm.
Flip side, DC still has a lot of $2.99 books, seems to be giving a little bit better bang for the buck on the print side, and doing new digital material a lot more than Marvel is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a little potentially passive-aggressive behavior between the two going on right now.
That could be, yeah.
And if we're benefiting, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what else do we have on here? There's just tons we can talk about. It's been a little while since we've gone over kind of how the numbers were done. Do we want to do that? Do we want to skip that?
Yeah, let's do that. I just wanted to mention one comic that, kind of in the same line. I love when when out of nowhere we get these oddball collections, and that was rank number 59, the Creature Commandos trade paperback for 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Sold 1,359 units, and this collected the classic, you know, what was it, 1970s, 1980s, John?
Yeah.
I guess of this stuff. And anybody who has been reading Frankenstein in the New 52 should definitely pick this up, or the Frankenstein from a few years back too. But I never got into the original Creature Commandos, but this one I saw, and it was listed, you know, over at DCBS as a special, and I really want to try this out. And this is collecting Weird World Tales 93, 97, 100, 102, 105, 108 through 112, 114 through 119, 121, and 124. Basically, the entire run of the entire Creature Commandos. And you probably read this.
Yeah, not yes. All of them. So I picked up that collected edition.
Oh, you did? Okay.
It may have even been, I'm trying to remember if that was one of the comic book page picks of the month over at DCBS.
Mm.
They are kind enough to let me pick a handful of things to do a slight bigger discount on. And again, that's something that I think fans not only of the Frankenstein stuff, but the war books that they did recently, and are looking for a little bit more kind of offbeat stuff out of DC. It's great stuff. I got a couple of those off the rack. It was just kind of winding down as I was starting to get interested in it. So yeah, I definitely.
But this was more. It wasn't a horror book. This is more like a horror comedy book, kind of like what Agents of Shade was, right?
It was a war book, like a Sergeant Rock, Sergeant Fury kind of a war book. But essentially with the universal monsters, you know, a Frankenstein, a vampire, a mummy, a werewolf, you know, that kind of a deal, a Medusa thrown in.
Yeah.
Not horror, not comedy, action adventure.
Okay.
And that was one of the DCBS picks that I did for that month. It's great stuff, and I like it when DC takes some of their older material and gets it out there. Because I think it could be fun to see a Creature Commandos book in the New 52.
Well, they tried with Agents of Shade, but it really didn't take off. I thought it was great, and they introduced, you know, Ray Palmer in it and everything, but
yeah.
But for whatever reason, it just didn't fly. But I liked it. I thought that was one of the better books to come out of the number ones, the original number ones.
I think it was certainly one of the more different ones, and I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to see them taking a few more risks, hopefully bankable risks, not like Green Team-type risks.
More like OMAC?
I was thinking more Mr. Terrific, Static,
yeah.
Even they didn't pan out.
Yeah, you like Static, that's right.
It was some good stuff. Things that I'd like to see them dive deeper into their library, find other stuff that has had successful runs. Again, go back to 70s, 80s era material, because I think there's a lot of things that they haven't milked to death since then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think we need another Booster Gold series, another Blue Beetle series, another Mr. Miracle series, even though that could be quite a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Bring back, you know, Spanner's Galaxy, the Omega Men.
Omega Men would be cool, yeah.
Stuff that's a little bit different than what we're seeing. So I think actually bringing Aquaman and the others, that's a great idea. That's going to be the first team book that's predominantly new characters for the New 52. So I definitely applaud all of that.
All right, what do you want to hit on next?
You know, it's really hard because so much of this is reorder activity. So much of this is just lackluster sales. And not bad sales, not, gee, I'm disappointed or anything, but slow start to the year. I kind of expect this. When the median sales for the top 300 is around 708 units.
Yeah.
Every other store maybe got a copy, maybe one in three, one in four, depending how many stories you think are out there. And again, the median, really, it's the average of 150 and 151. Half the items did this or better, half did this or worse. The top 300 bottoms out at 370 units. We had some visibility below that this time around, which had some interesting stuff. But again, just an amazing amount of reorder activity. And I think part of that comes down to some months better materials released than others. You know, we saw a huge number of high ticket items last month around, you know, began getting them out to the stores in time for Christmas, mm-hmm. when, you know, big gift giving time is. We're not seeing that kind of a thing, nor would I expect to in January. Really, the big months overall tend to be more, you know, the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Christmas time being another one of those.
Would you expect February to be a lackluster month, too?
Yeah, it usually is. Again, on the top comic side, we only had one item over 100,000. We've had months in the not-too-distant past where, you know, six or more is not, you know, unreasonable. So I think as titles rotate in and out, it's a crapshoot as to what you get every month.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that rotation happening faster and faster. And can they get stuff that they then collect that then does well on the trade side? And I think doing well on the trade side is harder than doing well on the comic side, in so much as not only have people had an opportunity usually to read the material before, but it's been around long enough that people can review it, get thoughts on it, get, you know, check out if it's worth getting or not before picking up the trade.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a higher threshold of quality that a trade has to do to be successful than those same stories on the issue sides need to do. Now, that having been said, the God Butcher, you know, 2,955 units, that was a pretty well-received story, as I recall.
I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic Thor story, yeah.
Did that get released in hardcover? I don't think it did.
I don't know. I can look that up real quick. I can tell you in a few minutes.
Actually, I can tell you. It did. It was released in May of last year, and it sold 730 units this month at rank 144 for a total of 4,313 units.
Mm-hmm.
So really, not all that much more in hardcover initially than it did in trade this month. What, 500, 600 more?
Yeah.
But $5 difference in the price point, and it comes out 6-7 months earlier.
Remember when The God Butcher was released, a lot of people didn't know what to make of it. Because they thought they were getting a Thor story, and what they got was Thor times three.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was not your typical Avengers book. It wasn't even your typical Thor book. So I think the second story arc, it kind of went back to the mainstream Thor that we know. And then in volume three, it kind of went back to young Thor with a little bit of the other two Thors thrown in there. And I think, what they said for volume four is we're going to get our 616 mainstream Thor with the future Thor. And, it's no spoiler because it was written in the solicitation, but, old Thor is going to fight old Galactus, which is going to be pretty cool. So, you know, he's all over the whole time continuum here, but it's the same Thor, but in different
points
eras,
in his
which
life,
is,
yeah.
I think it's very interesting. Yeah. I think it's very, very interesting. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're telling some fun stuff there. And you're right, there was a point at which it was hard to know what to make of it with the different versions of Thor going on and stuff like that.
And even at the point where the villain, and I forget his name, he came across as this, you know, God Butcher, Thanos type, you know, killing machine. And then I think it was issue three or four, they told his story and you felt sympathy for the character, you know? And
yeah, they did a great job letting us get to know him.
Yeah, and you're like, maybe he's not such a bad guy after all. And of course he is a very bad guy, but, you know, you felt sorry for the guy, just like you felt sorry, when they did Thanos, which that's the comparisons I'm drawing. when we the four issue Thanos that we had last year about him growing up and how the other kids on Titan, you know, bullied him almost and kind of made him what he is today, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely a misunderstood child. So yeah, it's interesting when they humanize the villain and you get to see that how things look from their side of the fence. You know, some great
Loki,
storytelling.
I mean, classic. You know, he's the poster child for something like that.
What they have done with him in Young Avengers and recent years and so forth, very interesting reimagining of the character without, you know, kind of disregarding what had gone before. And it was kind of a unique character that they could do that kind of revitalization.
Well, I'm looking forward to Agent of Asgard. I think that's going to be a really cool story. And as far as the movies go, John, I think Tom Hiddleston is the best character in every single movie of the entire Marvel Universe. You know, he's awesome.
I think he's a great actor, no question
about
that.
But the character...
The character's fun. What the character's goal and plot was in the Avengers movie is still a little unclear to me, and I haven't seen the second Thor movie.
Oh, he shines in that. Well, that's out at the end of February. He shines in that, yeah.
Yeah. No surprise. They've done a really good job casting those movies and bringing them to life. Since we're on movie digression as we sometimes do. I did watch the Justice League War movie. Took a little bit to get used to some of the new voices. Some of them were really good. Shamar Moore as Cyborg, great. Alan Tudyk as Superman, interesting. Not bad, just I need to get used to it. This was something, I picked it up at a Target, and it was like right above the Trapped in Time one over in the kids section. I've watched the movie now. This is not a kids movie. There were a couple of places I was like, really, that's their plan? Let's go stab the guy in the eyes.
It's the same what I told you about last month with Flashpoint. That doesn't deserve to be in the... That should not be in the kids section whatsoever.
Flashpoint was edgy. I thought War pushed the boundaries
further. Okay. I'll have to watch it.
It made me, I don't say uncomfortable, but it's like... The whole time I'm thinking, I saw this in the kids section. No. It's a darker tone. There was profanity in it. There was definite violence, beheading, ripping limb from limb type stuff. This is not a Saturday morning cartoon at all.
Not Justice League Unlimited.
Nor do I expect it to be. Yeah. It's a much harder core movie, which is what they set out to do, so be it. But I think it is something that could have and should have been marketed more clearly as such, just to protect them from the wrath of parents who look at it and think, what the heck, you know? What else do we have that looks interesting? We have far too much we could talk about in terms of some of the below-the-radar stuff. It's been a little while since we recapped kind of what the source data I have is and kind of what I do with it.
Let's kick off the year with that.
Yeah, I mean, again, we've been talking about these numbers for 7 or so years. I forget how long. Again, I started in late 2005. We picked this up sometime, I think, in 2006, so ages. So, every month, Diamond releases the top trades, top comics, top books, top magazines, and the market shares. I pretty much disregard the market shares. The market shares are the split by publisher of everything sold. Well, I don't have insight into everything sold, so I can't really back those numbers up. So, you know, hey, they're fine, they're interesting. I go with a breakdown of what I can show. And I'm limiting that to the top 300 because that's pretty consistent and I can do apples to apples comparison. On the comic side, going back like 10 years, not so much on the trade because the trade used to start at the top 10, then the top 25, the top 50, top 100, now the top 300. On the comics and trade lists, we get essentially the same data. We get a quantity ranking. That's how these things rank in terms of bestseller, second bestseller, third bestseller. We get a retail ranking. I'll come back to that in a minute. Let me get to the other columns so we can have the data so I can explain that. We get a diamond order index. This is a percentage based on how a key item on the comics list sells. Normally that key item is Batman. It could be Detective. It could really be any item on the list. But that item is defined as selling 100.00. It sold 100% of what it sold. Well, golly, that makes sense. Everything else sold some percentage of that, 150%, 50%, 10%, 2%. If you wind up with something just selling, you know, like a Civil War or an Amazing Spider-Man or a Walking Dead variant cover type thing that sells just multiple times Batman, you have, you know, an order index of like 300 and something or just crazy numbers. But like this time, Batman topped the list, so everything was a percentage under that 100. And it goes to the two decimal places for what they publish. We've got the diamond order number, which is basically the three-letter month, two-digit year, and then a four-digit item within that previews. Anything that's got an 8,000 is something that never went through previews. It was an online previews plus kind of a deal. Stores knew about it. If you really pay attention on the website, you might have known about it. Usually it's like, I find out about it because, well, it's on the list. Then we get the description. This is the bane of my existence because they put the title, the variant, the mature reader tag, the hardcover, the all kinds of stuff into this one thing that I've got to go parse through. We then get the cover price and a vendor code. And the vendor code has been known to flip from month to month and over the years and such, and it's hard for me to kind of keep that up to date. So sometimes we've seen in the list, well, how come this is listed as thus and so? Well, sometimes I goofed, sometimes they goofed. I get all that. I marry that up with what's shipped, what was solicited. I can find out, you know, if they had multiple order codes and things of the sort. Actually, that's provided in the item code stuff. I can dig up the solicitation blurb. I can compare this stuff to how previous issues and trades sold. That's how we get a lot of this stuff. That's how I do the total reported estimated sales. I just say, hey, what have I seen for this before? Those must be the total reported sales. We talked before about how some people think these numbers are incorrect. They're just misunderstood. This is what is invoiced to retailers during the month. These numbers favor stuff released earlier in the month than later in the month because it's had more time during the month to sell. Reorders are defined as anything that happened after the initial month of sales. So, say something comes out the first week of the month, like that all-new X-Men Volume 1, yesterday's X-Men trade paperback, came out on January 8th. In theory, a store could get more copies on the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th, all of which are January sales, all of which would have been in that number, the 3,540. If, however, a couple of more units sell next month, that shows up as reorder activity. That's all of that. Oh, the retail ranking. Again, that's everything. This is what's invoiced to retailers. So they take the invoiced amount, which is not the quantity times the dollars. That's the retail price of it, the retail value of it. Obviously, the stores need to make money. They need to get these things at a discount unless it's a net item, at which point they pay what they listed as the price or whatever. Anyways, what they pay at the discounted rate is what they get invoiced. That's what the retail ranking is based on. Every once in a while, we'll find something that's just got a crazy low retail ranking or crazy high retail ranking, meaning it sold way lower than you think it might have, because sometimes they burn these off in fire sales. They do progressive sales, you know, a time or two a year. You buy it this week, it's 70% off. Next week, it's 75, then 80, then 85, then 90. If you're willing to wait that long and gamble, it's still available. Most stores get anywhere between, the lowest discount a store can get, I think, is 35% for most comics and trades. The highest they can get is approaching 60%. I think it's 59.5, but I haven't checked recently. Bigger the store, the more volume they do, the better the discount they get. Maybe they pass it on to you, maybe they don't. Up to them. I mean, they gotta run their business how they gotta run their business. That's pretty much in a nutshell the data Diamond provides and kinda sorta what I do with it. Once I know what any one item on the list's sold, I can do all of them based on just algebra. Not that hard. Which is why I'm always puzzled when somebody says, oh, these numbers are wrong. No, they just don't mean what you think they mean. Again, what's invoiced to retailers, not what Diamond ordered, because they need to have copies for reorders, damages, whatever else. It's not what creators are getting royalties on, because those royalties include digital sales, sales outside of the Diamond sales channel, you know, to like bookstores and newsstands and stuff like that. So again, there's some misunderstanding about what these numbers are and aren't. But I think this is, certainly on the comic side, the lion's share of the sales, most of it's happening through Diamond. On the trade side, obviously not so much, because bookstores and Amazon and stuff are bigger factors for trades. But I think it's the core readership in a lot of it, and certainly gives us a lot of information.
How much time do you put into this once you get your data?
It varies. Some of this is a little before, during, and after type stuff. The way the timing works out on this is on Friday, kind of like the first Friday of the month, Diamond releases the top 10 list. So that's when I kind of start, I don't say the clock running, but when I start some of my process. I make sure I've cleaned up all the shipping lists, the solicitation lists, the cancellation lists, everything else I need in preparation. But at that point, I don't have order codes. I only have the top 10. It's pretty much useless information to me. Mm-hmm. Then on Monday, the full list is released for everything. At which point the clock really kind of starts running. It's kind of, you know, and I'm sure if I were a little slower, Jonas wouldn't, at Comic Book Resources, which is, I try to get the stuff to him in a timely manner, just because I know it's going up on other websites, and I want to feel like I'm doing right by him. He's been great to work with and work for and stuff over the years. Great, great guy. So the sooner I can turn it around for him, the better I feel. But what that means is I've got the top 400 comics, 300 trades. Don't really worry too much about the books and the magazines, but I've got to get that cleaned up enough that I can then marry it to the previous data, get the comparison of how did it sell to last issue, last volume, whatever. A lot of that is kind of sort of automated. Some of it still has some moving parts where I got to copy some data from here to there. And obviously I've got to unzip the thing out of the email and all that stuff, kick the ball off. Certain parts of the process I'm still trying to replace. They're kind of slow. But going from getting the files to having the first cut of the spreadsheet I give you, on a good day, an hour.
Oh, okay.
That's first cut. At which point I realize, oh crap, I forgot to load this, this isn't good, and I've got to go clean stuff up. It usually takes me at least 5-6 hours to go through the process a couple of times, start to build up the article, start to really look at the data, find out some of the stuff worth talking about, build some charts, and stuff like that. It's the kind of thing, if I had it on the weekend and had that time to play with it, I could do a lot deeper analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, this evening, we're recording this on Tuesday night. Monday, the data came out. I did all that. Was up kind of late. I got home today, started playing with one of the spreadsheets, added a bunch of columns so I could do some analysis, double-check a few things, whatever. Pulled a few things out of the data that I found interesting. You know, I do another couple hours on that. And then, obviously, we record. I got to edit, do all that. Don't really enjoy the whole editing and do all that, but hey, got to get done to do the podcast. And then I'm going to record with Sam on the comics side. That's another couple hours. And like I said, I'm trying to revamp the whole number crunching process to where, in theory, take the file, drop the zip file, unzip it, say go, and it does all the work for me. That's a pipe dream. I know that. But there are a couple of things I could certainly automate and make my life a lot easier.
Yeah.
But it's a fair amount of work. But I find it interesting, and I got into this like 15 years ago, I guess, thereabouts, because I was thinking about going into publishing comics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm going to publish comics, I sure want to know how they're selling. And then it's like, well, the first issue does this, the second does this, the third does, oh, crap, that doesn't look good. And at the time, sales weren't too bad. But, you know, they certainly haven't done better since then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been interesting. It's been educational. At some point I still would like to publish, but I want to make sure I've got my ducks in a row and I've got a good game plan going in, because it's tough. I look at some great, great books that are doing amazingly lower on the list than I think they should. It surprises me. It disappoints me at times, but that's the way the game is played. That kind of answer the question?
It does. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So what do you got coming up on your show?
Well, I'm going to do probably a news recap this week, but I've got my 9-year anniversary coming up, John.
Wow, congratulations.
9. We started in 2005. So,
wow.
Oh my God. I don't know if I'm going to cap it off at 10 or what, but man, it's I can't believe I've been doing it this long, but I think for the show, I advertised I was going to do it this week, but I might save it for my anniversary, is go over the Library of American Comics Superman newspaper strip reprint book. They're kind of getting into that. They're picking up where Kitchen Sink left off. But they do have the rights to go back and reprint the kitchen sink stuff. And that'll be the last two volumes they do, both the Batman dailies and Superman dailies and Batman Sundays and Superman Sundays. But what's interesting, they're also going to be bringing out the Wonder Woman daily comic strip, which is a very, very rare strip. It's never been reprinted. I've never even seen a strip of Wonder Woman. So it's going to be really cool to see what Dean Mullaney has in store when that book finally gets released.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'm thinking I'd seen some of them, like, in the newspaper back in, like, the 80s or something.
Could be, yeah.
And if they're what I'm thinking, they were really well done.
Mm-hmm.
But I could be completely mistaken and misremembering stuff. Cool.
What about you?
Let's see. The next Weekly Comic Spotlight I record with Drew, we're going to go over the Green Lantern, Red Lantern 28 flip book. We're going to go over that Loki Agent of Asgard issue. I'm looking forward to that. It should mm-hmm. be fun. And the Archer and Armstrong Archer Zero.
Oh, cool.
Stuff. So a lot of good stuff there. I've still got like half my stack to read. Don't know if I'll get that done before I record with Drew or not. Probably not. Again, crunching the numbers eats up some time. Got that going on. What else? Let's see, we've just done the preview spotlight. That'll go up tomorrow as we record this, and depending when I put this up, either a few days ago or about a week ago, depending. Yeah, that's same old. Keep going with the weekly comic spotlight, do the monthly previews teleconference and preview spotlight. Everyone's welcome to send in clips on the spotlight. Everyone's welcome to join in on the teleconference. Basically, we go on Skype and talk comics. That's always a lot of fun. And I'm planning on doing some more programming and number crunching over the holiday weekend coming up, seeing if I can cut over to the new system, because that could cut my cycle time down on the, oh crap, I did something wrong, I've got to go let the computer go think for a while. Certainly speed things up there.
Awesome.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.